from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up this morning on Forum, it looks as if California will have a budget after all, with the governor and his fellow Democrats coming to an agreement yesterday based on more possible cuts and the expectation of additional revenues.
In case we're over-optimistic, we have severe trigger cuts that will be triggered and go into effect, and those are real.
The so-called trigger cuts are built into the budget proposal. We'll find out what also is in it, and we'll hear your responses as we discuss what lies ahead for California in the next fiscal year. Forum is next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Yesterday, in a joint news conference with Democratic leaders, Governor Jerry Brown indicated he was no longer going to pursue trying to reach a bipartisan budget agreement with California lawmakers, and he said he would push through a spending plan solely with the support of Democratic legislators.
We had some very serious discussions. I thought we were getting close, but as I look back on it, there is a almost religious reluctance to ever deal with the state budget in a way that requires new revenues.
Last week, for the first time in California history, the governor had vetoed a Democratic budget package he called inadequate and described as being full of gimmicks, whereupon State Controller John Chang invoked the new voter-approved law keeping legislators from getting paid. A new proposal, worked out by the governor with Democratic legislators yesterday, is based on the expectation that the state will bring in an additional $4 billion in revenue in the upcoming fiscal year. If those revenues do not materialize, cuts to K-12, higher education, and corrections will go even deeper later in the year. And joining us to discuss the state budget proposal this morning is our own John Meyer, Sacramento Bureau Chief for KQED-FM. And good morning, John.
Good morning, Michael.
Well, what do we know in terms of what broke down and what came about here and that religious reluctance of GOP lawmakers? I mean, can we separate that from the fact that the GOP lawmakers are saying the governor didn't come through for them?
Well, no, unfortunately, we can't yet. And I think that's going to be, you know, one of those fascinating things that political watchers like me are going to want to learn at some point here is why did the bipartisan effort that Brown was pushing all these months, why did it break down? Was it that Republicans just simply would not accept anything that the governor gave them and would not deal with the taxes no matter what, which is, you know, what the governor said in that comment that you played? Or, as Republicans tell it, Democrats would not go far enough and organized labor on the left would not allow Democrats to go far enough. You know, we really don't know where those negotiations broke down. But suffice it to say, Brown realized that his plan A, this plan where he was going to have a combination of cuts and taxes, and the taxes were going to go on the ballot, that the plan A wasn't going to work. And so he had to go to a plan B or almost a plan C, because if you look at this budget that he's agreed to, this is largely the Democratic budget he vetoed, with the exception of really the egregious, I think, gimmicks that he said he couldn't sign.
Well, it also relies on an economic surge for windfall tax collections. And the fact of the matter is, I mean, you've got Minority Leader Bob Dutton saying this is hope without a charge. I mean, $4 billion is a lot to expect. What's it based on?
Well, and it's even beyond $4 billion. Let me back it up a little bit to explain to the audience exactly where we started. When Jerry Brown put out a budget in January, that January budget assumes it projects revenues for the year that we were in, which is now until Friday, July 1st, and then it assumes revenues for the coming fiscal year. If you look back at where the assumption of revenues over those two budget years are now compared to January, the governor and Democrats believe there is a windfall of almost $12 billion of additional revenue. So the $4 billion you mentioned is part of that 12. That's $12 billion of revenue that was unexpected in January. Now, where did it come from? Great question. The economy might be doing a slight uptick in California, though nothing that really brings in a lot of money. Higher income earners have been sending in more tax dollars to the state. Maybe there's some capital gains profits being taken there. But, you know, part of this could, in fact, be that Brown was very conservative in his original projections back in January. I mean, you know, Jerry Brown has got a reputation personally as being thrifty, I guess we should call it. And so maybe this is
parsimonious
budgeting. Yeah, very good. And so this is maybe his perhaps thrifty budgeting. And so some of this revenue, I think, actually bought Brown some space here now to say, okay, well, we have another way to solve the problem. But yeah, Republicans say this is way too optimistic. I think the real difference here and from years past where we've had all kinds of rosy scenarios is that this one does seem to have some teeth, as you talked about at the top of the broadcast. There are $3 to $4 billion of these projected revenues that are tied to cuts that will happen if the revenues don't come in. And I think that Brown and Democrats believe, and we'll certainly see here in the next couple of days, that Wall Street investors, which the state needs for a short-term cash infusion, that Wall Street investors will look at this and say, okay, we believe that you're good on this budget because you do have a way to cut if you don't get the money. And I think that that trigger is a really important part.
We're talking, by the way, to KQED-FM Sacramento Bureau Chief John Myers. And as you stated before, John, as you alluded to, a lot in this that was in it before when Brown rejected it. The jailing and supervising of convicts moved from the state to the local, eliminating redevelopment agencies. He's indicated again that he'll sign a bill requiring online retailers to collect state sales tax. In other words, it looks pretty much the same. What are the gimmicks that are missing?
The gimmicks that are missing were a couple in particular. One, there was an assumption in the budget that he vetoed that the state would continue this course that started in Schwarzenegger of trying to sell state buildings and lease them back, which was supposed to be a short-term cash infusion. That has been tied up in lawsuits, and Jerry Brown himself earlier this year said, I'm not going to do it. It's over. I'm canceling the deal. The Democrats were essentially saying, you know, we're still going to count the money. So that was a gimmick, of course. There was an assumption in that budget that the state would take in several hundred million dollars more from the federal government to help for the state's Medi-Cal program. That's no longer in this. And there was also an assumption of borrowing money from the tobacco tax dollars that now go to early childhood programs, that has been tied up in a lawsuit. And that was also a gimmick that now is no longer in this. So all of these additional revenues, these revenue projections here, kind of fill in that gap there. And you know, and several people, including myself, as recently as last week, were looking at the budget that was vetoed and said, you know, I can see here where Brown and the Democrats only need to resolve $4 to $5 billion of their differences, which sounds like a lot, but not in the context of a whole budget. Well, lo and behold, we got, you know, $4 billion of unexpected revenues, and here we are.
What about the idea in this that it's a victory for the Republicans, which we're hearing from people like Connie Conway, Assemblywoman from Tulare? She's saying every average California family will save $1,000 a year. Therefore, the GOP got just what it wanted, tax relief.
Well, I think this is going to be one of those interesting moments where you're going to hear Republicans try to present their own best case scenario. I think you're going to have a little bit of spin. And frankly, there's not agreement on the Republican side of the aisle about what was wanted. You had a small group of Republicans, and Ms. Conway, who's the Republican leader in the assembly, was not one of them. But a small group of Republicans who have been negotiating with Brown for several months that said, you know, we are willing to consider the idea of an election on these taxes because you needed Republican votes to put this on the ballot. But in exchange, we want rollbacks on public employee pensions. We want a tighter cap on state budget spending. We want changes to environmental regulations. And so, again, as we talked about a moment ago, the question is, did they just not find anything they wanted? Did they want too much? Or did Brown and those on the left just not be able to give them enough? And so you do have all these other Republicans now who believe the taxes were something they hated from the beginning, and they're going to spend a lot of time over the next couple of days telling you that no additional taxes is the victory here. And we should point out to people really quickly, Michael, that on Friday, as a result of this, on Friday, the state sales tax will go down, so by a 1 cent. The state vehicle license fee, the registration fee, the car tax fee that you pay is going down, and people are already getting wind of that. And so those things were what Brown wanted to keep at their current levels. They will all go down now on Friday.
Well, Governor Brown's not only getting criticism from the Republicans on the areas that you just mentioned before, that we've mentioned, but you have Democrat Ted Lieu from Torrance who's saying he was playing fast and loose with a balanced budget and really withheld these projections from the legislature. Is that the case?
Well, you know, the governor controls the State Department of Finance, and they are the main revenue number crunchers in addition to the legislature has their own folks. But they are the main ones. They do all of the big heavy lifting in projecting where the economy is and what revenues do. Whether they withheld numbers that they knew, you know, that's going to be one of those questions we're going to find out. But suffice it to say, I do think that Brown had instructed his troops back in January to be conservative, to be a little bit more limited in how hopeful they were about revenues. And I do think that gave him some breathing room here at the end to be able to go back in and fill in things that he wasn't able to get. I mean, who knows, if he had gotten the tax extensions and these revenues, then of course you would have had Democrats asking to roll back a lot of the cuts that have happened to schools, to higher education, to health and human services. And so, you know, the revenues gave Brown a window. Whether they withheld information, I guess we'll ask those questions today.
Again, we're talking to John Myers, who is KQED's Sacramento Bureau Chief. He's with us from the state capitol, and you can be with us. In fact, we invite your phone calls. If you'd like to join us, you can do that now. Our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786. Feel free to join the program. Again, at our toll-free number, if you have some thoughts, questions, or comments about the state budget, which apparently will be the budget now, 866-733-6786 is the number to call. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or you can post a question or comment on our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. We're going to bring a couple of other voices in this, but here's a web comment from a listener who calls himself Captain Suburbia and says, doesn't this Democratic budget solution still need Republican support to be enacted? John Myers?
It does not, because of Prop 25 last year. It's a majority vote budget. It does not have tax increases. The only thing that requires a two-thirds vote in the Capitol now is a budget that has an increase in taxes, or, as what Brown was trying to do, to put a ballot measure in front of the voters. But because it has no taxes and it doesn't go to an election, it's a majority vote budget. Democrats control overwhelming majorities in both houses, and unless there is a revolt in the Democratic ranks today, which none of us are expecting, this budget's headed to Brown's desk later, probably by the end of the day.
And what do you say to Republican Bob Huff, who said that's nearly $11 billion in new revenue the Democrats assume will magically appear? That's a wand that Harry Potter would be proud to wield.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see. We're going to get more of this, I think, from Republicans who are skeptical about these revenue numbers. I would point out that budgets are often are our best guess, and sometimes the best guess can veer into very optimistic guesses. And while these are optimistic revenue assumptions, these are not the most optimistic ones I've ever seen covering the Capitol. And I would refer people back to 2009. And 2010, where Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger assumed about $8 billion or more from the federal government to help solve the problem. And that was money that no one had ever told him for sure we were going to get. So that, you know, really to me set the bar for optimistic assumptions. These are optimistic, but once again, if some of them don't come in, they're going to be cuts that cut spending to education and other programs.
Including seven fewer school days a year as part of the triggers that we'll be talking about some more. Let me go to Gene Ross, who is executive director of the California Budget Project. They're a public policy research group based in Sacramento. And say hello to you, Gene. Welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Good morning. And John Fleischman also is joining us this morning.
GOP. Good morning.
Good morning, John. I want to give you your bona fides, GOP strategist and publisher of the flashreport.org website on California politics. Well, John Myers was just telling us about how Republicans are going to be talking about pie in the sky and where do these projections come from and the money will not materialize. Can you be a little more specific about those kinds of responses?
Well, I mean, I think the primary concern is that this particular budget, the way that it was put together, I think was cobbled together more to fulfill the requirement under Proposition 25 that the legislators can't be paid unless they pass a quote-unquote balanced budget. I think that you'll find that both, and I won't speak for Gene, but I think you'll find that both neither Gene nor I are particularly happy with this budget and the way that it lays out. But the philosophy of the legislators, you know how when you're on the airplane and they always say, well, put the oxygen on the adults first and then feed the kids? Well, I think in this case, it's like, you got to pay us first and then we'll take care of our business. So,
well, Gene, you're not happy with this budget, he says. Why?
Actually, I don't think that's a fair characterization. I think given the fact that the only thing the legislature can do by majority vote is a budget that cuts spending, and I think there are some incredibly deep cuts. A lot of those cuts were done back in March, and there tends to be a short attention span, I think, in the public and sometimes by the media around what happens. I think lawmakers reached a point where they realized that the vast majority of Californians didn't want to cut any deeper. We need a spending plan in place by July 1. I think the revenue estimates are what I would call aggressive, probably not totally unreasonable. You know, everything in the economy right now is touch and go. It depends what happens in Europe and Greece, Portugal, some of those countries. It depends what happens at the federal level around negotiations and the debt ceiling and what that might mean for the U.S. economy and therefore the California economy. I think it is the best we can expect to get when you have a legislature that's left playing with one hand tied behind its back. We were skeptics around Prop 25. We've always argued that a budget is both a spending plan and an income plan, and that you need to have majority rules for both sides of the ledger. I think this is what you get when you have an ability in budget rules that allow a very small handful of lawmakers to hold up progress on the balanced plan, which is what California really needs.
But
in terms of the partisan debate on the estimates, the revenue estimates announced yesterday, I'm looking at a budget document put out by Republican lawmakers in early May. Interestingly, they called for using higher revenue estimates as a way of avoiding tax increases. I think they're now backing off on some of the statements perhaps made earlier this year.
Well, let me go to John Fleischman, because, John, what we're hearing from Republicans is a kind of mantra, you know, nothing done on employee pension plans, nothing done on regulatory reform, nothing even approaching a spending cap. And that's pretty much been the position all along, hasn't it?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, the line in the sand that the Republicans staked out was that in the middle of a recession, the last thing we need to do is increase taxes. And when I say that, there's a debate about are you extending or increasing taxes. But I mean, the reality is because Republicans have stayed unified, in just a few days, the state income tax is going to drop by a point. Excuse me, the sales tax is going to drop, the car tax is going to drop, the income tax already dropped. So what we're getting is tax relief. Republicans are focused on job creation. We're never going to solve this problem until we can bring private sector job creation back up, and everybody who goes to work is no longer on unemployment getting government subsidies, and in fact are paying taxes, which will help give more revenues to the state of California. And so, you know, Republicans, you're going to hear them talk a lot about the fact that this budget, this majority vote budget by the Democrats, and the fact that it does not contain the tax increases that they all want and that the governor wants, are actually a victory for California taxpayers.
Well, Gene Ross, the cuts in the triggering that's included in this budget proposal are going to be even more severe. I mean, when the budget went before Jerry Brown and he said, no, there are gimmicks in it and so forth, we heard outcries from corrections. We heard outcries from higher education. We can't bear these kinds of cuts. If this money doesn't materialize, we're going to see even more severe cuts.
That's true. I think this really is a budget plan that was put together with an eye to what the lenders who need to lend California the cash flow dollars that we typically do, the state does almost every year. I think this is a budget that's crafted for the investment bankers and to put the state in a position when it can go to the still somewhat fragile financial markets and borrow the money it needs to make payments to schools and community colleges to start the school year, to do that traditional cash flow borrowing. The cuts are deep. We're only now beginning to find out exactly how that trigger mechanism is constructed. This is what's often called a cone of silence budget. There's not a lot of details. They're not bills. Some of the bills, I guess, are going into print this morning so the public can look at them. Others won't be available until they actually vote on the floor later today. It appears that some of the very deep cuts to social services that were partially rolled back in the budget last week will be tied to that trigger. The deep cuts to education that John Myers talked about. And I think, again, when we look at what the voters want from government in California. If you look at the field poll, the Public Policy Institute of California, and some of the other independent polling that's been done, over and over and over again, we see voters reaffirm their commitment to schools, to health care, to social services. We have a situation where the majority party represents 60% more in the assembly of the seats, but again, they don't have that two-thirds vote needed to bring in the revenues. And I think all the experts agree is what California really needs to get our fiscal house in order, not just for a few months, but for 2 to 5 years.
I'm sorry. Did you ever thought you were going to finish there, Gene?
No.
Well, because I wanted to just ask John Myers, we're going to see tax increases on a November ballot as a measure, aren't we, John? Probably.
Well, we might. I mean, you know, the governor's plan, this plan assumes that we're going to have some kind of discussion of what he didn't get on the November 2012 ballot. That could be, well, actually, it's going to have some kind of revenue attached to it. But it includes this realignment of services from the state to the local level, local control, county control mainly of those services. And there would have to be some kind of money attached to that. That's where Brown's tax extensions, almost all of them would have gone, was to the realignment proposal. So that looks like it would be pushed backward. But yeah, you've got interest groups out there who are lining up to talk about a tax on oil production, a tax on high-income earners. And then on John Fleischman's side of the world, you've got people talking about more severe rollbacks in public employee pensions. So you're going to have a very big political war. You know, Jerry Brown a few months ago said that if his plan failed, he thought it would be a war of all against all in California politics. I think that very likely could describe 2012. I think some people think we've already had it this year, and that's why we have the budget we've got.
We're also going to have a lot of litigation, aren't we? I mean, just think about redevelopment to begin with.
That's the number one. That's the number one one that I think everyone's watching for, a lawsuit. I mean, this plan assumes that redevelopment agencies, as they exist now, would be abolished. Would give the state $1.7 billion this year to help solve its problems. And then redevelopment agencies would be allowed to transfer into a new program where they'd have to share more money with other services, more of their property tax dollars that they normally kept. Redevelopment agencies do not like that, by and large. Cities do, by and large, do not like it. I would expect as soon as you see the governor sign the budget, you're going to see a lawsuit filed.
One other thing before we go to a break, which we're going to have to do in just a minute or so, John Myers, and that is this budget, which will probably, as you say, be approved later on this evening, toward this evening, it keeps deferral of school funding.
It does indeed. It does. It continues to delay a little less than $3 billion in funding for schools that they are normally supposed to get. It basically pushes it out, says we'll give you the money later. There have been more and more deferrals of K-12 education and community college funding in the last few years because, frankly, that is the single largest part of the budget pie, and that's the only way you can do it without effectively giving the cut. You know, under a cut scenario, they never get the money. Under a deferral, we tell them we'll give you the money later. Maybe you go out and borrow and find some other way to get to it. And you know, Michael, I should point out, Gene Ross did make a very good point that if we look back at the entire package from March to now, almost $15 billion of the original $26 billion deficit has been spending reductions, and they have been in all kinds of programs from education to social services and beyond.
We're talking about the budget. California Governor Jerry Brown and Democratic leaders announced yesterday they had reached a deal on a majority vote budget. We're getting the details on the plan, expected to come for a vote later on today. You may want to comment, and you may indeed want to register your own responses to this budget proposal. You also may have questions. Our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or post a question or comment on our website by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on this segment. We're talking with our Sacramento Bureau Chief, John Myers, who's with us from Sacramento, Gene Ross, who is Executive Director of the California Budget Project, and John Fleischman, GOP strategist and publisher of the FlashReport.org website on California politics. When we return, we'll hear from you. I'm Michael Krasny. You're listening to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Yesterday, California Governor Jerry Brown and Democratic leaders announced They'd reached a deal on a majority vote on a budget for the state of California. We're talking about it with John Fleischman, GOP strategist and publisher of the flashreport.org website on California politics. Gene Ross, executive director of the California Budget Project, a public policy research group based in the state capitol. And our own John Myers, who is in Sacramento as Sacramento bureau chief for KQED-FM. Just to read a couple of your emails here, as a listener who says, so this Democratic budget cuts UC and CSU by $1.3 billion in 1 year, the greatest percentage cut to colleges and universities ever, even more than the 25% cut in the Great Depression, and the trigger would result in $200 million more in cuts to UC and CSU in the mid-year. Talk about eating your seed corn. Another listener, Susan, says, in case no one noticed, the Republicans have one overriding agenda to oppose and obstruct any Democrat proposal on legislation. This is true in California and in the nation. If anything can possibly happen, Dems will have to go it alone and stop pandering to the obstructionists. I hope the Washington crowd figures this out before the country collapses. And Ed in Walnut Creek says, Governor Brown refuses to even mention any pension reform. It's obvious he has a religious reluctance to do so based on a religious-type obligation to his political base, organized labor. So how much of tax funds go to support the state pension system, and how much is it expected to grow at the expense of other public services? Why is there no discussion of this? Well, let's go to your calls, and let's find out what you want to discuss. Michael, join us. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a comment and a question. My comment is that I believe that the perpetual budget problems we face are simply a reflection of the amendment process run amok. We keep voting for things that cost money but don't actually find ways for our legislators to fund them. My question is, if the triggers do have to be enacted, is there anything that prevents Governor Brown from targeting Republican districts if those members don't vote for tax increases?
John Myers.
The trigger, and again, I think it was mentioned earlier, we haven't seen the specific language yet. That's one of the frustrating parts about budget deals that happen like this. Neither the public nor the press gets to have a lot of time to see exactly what's in it. But as it has been described, the trigger is going to be something that the administration feels as though they are not going to wade into how to resolve. And this is partly, I think, a separation of powers issue. They, you know, will not be the ones who make the decisions where to cut. And so what happens in December after we get revenues looked at is late December, early January, the governor's budget director, who's the director of the Department of Finance, will look at the revenue projections. And if they meet a certain threshold, which is basically about $3 billion of the new $4 billion assumption, then no cuts happen. If they come in at tiers under that, then some cuts start to trigger on the higher education, courts, developmental services with the shorter school year, the K-12 cut to the very last cut that happens. But there's been talk about this whole thing of can you make more cuts happen in some districts other than others. The governor has never seemed to be a fan of that, as have I think probably some more cool-headed people in the Capitol, because eventually what you do then is you wonder whether you start to punish particular people for the actions of their legislators, with which they may or may not agree on. I mean, remember, not everybody in a particular state assembly or Senate district votes. Not everybody is of one particular party. And as a result, you know, what do you do then about, you know, holding someone accountable? So it's been an interesting idea. A lot of Democrats would love to see Republicans have to feel the pain at home. But no one has stepped forward to say that's what we're going to do.
So, John, when we're getting all these people asking us by email and on our website for details on the specific trigger cuts or where they can find them, the answer is they can't.
They can in some of the news reporting. So I would promote my own work and other people's work. But, I mean, as the trigger cuts have been laid out to us, and I'm just sitting here looking off of my reporter's notebook from the briefing yesterday, depending on which tier you're in, and again, they're basically three tiers of trigger cuts. I don't want to get too down into the policy wonk world of this, but the spending that would be identified for cuts is $250 million in home-to-school transportation, an additional $100 million to the UC, an additional $100 million to the CSU system, $100 million in corrections, and $200 million in health and human services, which we're told is mainly for developmental services and developmentally disabled. And then, of course, there is the $1.5 billion cut to education if the revenues don't come in. So the whole list is about $2.5 billion of cuts that would happen if the revenues don't materialize. And while that's not a huge amount of money, again, looking at this, given the magnitude of the spending reductions over the last few years, those would be, I think, pretty significant cutbacks.
So we've got a listener, Gene Ross, who wants to know, how does this budget translate to public schools? Are the class sizes going to go up? Are they going to cut staff? And what does it mean for transportation projects?
Transportation will come through this budget relatively unscathed. That's in large part, this goes back to the caller who talked about the initiative process, because a lot of those transportation dollars have been locked down, which means that they don't get their quote-unquote fair share of the cuts, and lawmakers have to go to the universities and other places when they're looking to balance the budget. Difficult to say for schools. The deferrals, it appears, as John said, are part of this agreement. We have been deeply troubled by the structure of that, because many school districts in our preliminary analyses suggest that it's mostly the lower income districts, no longer either have reserves and in some cases don't have the ability to borrow to meet their cash flow needs. So even though they'll get the dollars down the line, they can't go to the financial markets at any kind of a reasonable cost to make payroll. So I think we will see some cutbacks to schools. We have seen some very deep cuts to schools. School spending has dropped about $1,000 per student since the beginning of the economic downturn. I think things won't get better. In some districts, things may get appreciably worse.
And again, Gene Ross with us from the State Capitol's Executive Director of the California Budget Project. Also with us this morning is California Senator Mark Leno, who represents San Francisco, Marin, and Sonoma, and chairs the Senate Budget and Fiscal Review Committee. And welcome, Mark Leno.
Good morning, Michael. Good to be with you.
Good to have you. And I'm interested, of course, in your response to this budget that's gone through. But here's a listener's response. Mark in San Mateo says, it's a Republican budget passed by Democrats with no Republican support.
Well, I think the caller's putting his finger on the real problem and core of our dysfunction, and that is we have the majority party as a result of Prop 25 last year, now with the authority by a simple majority vote to pass the budget, but it still takes a two-thirds majority vote to raise any revenue or even to let the voters decide to raise some revenue. And that's where the dysfunction is, where a minority of legislators can veto, overturn, prohibit that which the majority wants. And that's a formula for dysfunction and disaster, and that's what's been plaguing us. And if the majority party could rule and make the decisions entirely. Keep in mind, balancing a budget is addition and subtraction. If you take addition off the table, you can't do your job. If Democrats could raise revenue, we would have enacted the governor's plan in total, the January plan, balanced approach, deep cuts, extension of current tax rates, and that would represent Democratic values. What we need to do as we move forward and get over this hurdle and onto next year's budget is to continue to better educate Californians that the majority party should have full authority to do its job, and that if you don't like what the majority party has done, in every 2 years, there's another election in non-gerrymandered districts, in open primaries, voters can change who's in the majority. It's called democracy, and it's worked in other places. We should try it in Sacramento.
Well, the same listener says the Republicans are clearly just looking for re-election in their home districts and kind of says that the Democratic legislators and Governor Brown have handed them sort of an open pass here. I'm just curious to know what your response is to the kind of criticism we're hearing. Maybe there's a kind of almost religious zealotry on the part of the Republicans refusing to have any taxes or even put it on the ballot. But at the same time, the GOP legislators are saying that you're all beholden to labor, nothing about employee pension plans that's moving forward progressively from their perspective, nothing about regulatory reform or nothing about spending cap.
We will be addressing, Michael, all of those issues in the coming weeks. None of those issues would have been a dollar's worth of resolution in our budget deliberations. They are not budget related. You know, there's a lot of talk, and I'm the first to say I support, and I did support, the most significant pension reform that we've seen in the state in over 20 years last October. 90% of my Senate Democrats and I voted for it. 60% of my Republican Senate colleagues did not vote for it. So Democrats have a history of supporting pension reform. There's further pension reform necessary. But just to remind you that of the entire budget, only about 5% of it is for pension costs. What is unsustainable and out of control is the cost of our debt service, the cost of our prison department, our corrections department, prison costs, and those are being tamed by Governor Brown's proposal. The realignment, when fully enacted in 2014, will reduce the cost of the Department of Corrections by $2 billion, a full 20%, which is major reform, and he's set his sights on the wall of debt he has identified, $35 billion of debt we've accumulated over the past few years as Republicans have stymied Democrats in raising the necessary revenue to keep this state healthy. And the governor and the Democrats in Sacramento want to take down that wall of debt so we don't pass it on to the next generation.
And let me go, if I may, to John Fleischman again, who's a Republican strategist and publisher of FlashReport.org. And, John, what do you say? I mean, I'm certainly getting emails that are saying essentially what we heard from Senator Leno, that the Republicans are being the obstructionists here and that they have been and that they're gaining a lot of traction by being obstructionists.
Well, I mean, again, one person's obstructionist is another person's adult supervision. And the challenge that we have is we're in the middle of a recession, and everybody's hurting right now. And the reality is every family in California is having to make tough decisions about where to cut your budget because there isn't as much money to go around. And Senator Leno and other people would extend these broad-based sales taxes, income taxes that hit every family in California. They're very regressive, that hit every family in California at a time when Californians don't have that money to give to the state. So nobody wants to see wholesale slashing and cuts that have very real impacts on vulnerable people.
So, John, you agree with Assemblywoman Conway that this is a Republican victory because families will save $1,000 a year?
I think it's very important. This is not a situation where Republicans are, you know, lighting up the tree and having a celebration because there is it's no fun and it's no good to have less resources available for everybody. But it is certainly the case that Republicans can claim credit for the fact that, but for their involvement, we would not see a reduction in the state sales tax. We would not see a reduction in income taxes. This is tax relief we need because the long-term solution to the problem is private sector job creation, and Senator Leno and others continue to increase regulation, continue to increase government control from Sacramento, and put chains on California's economy so that we can come back. They want to create their particular favorite kinds of jobs rather than letting the free market work and operate and get everybody off the dole and back into jobs, because if someone's working, they're not taking unemployment, and instead, they're actually generating tax revenue for the state. That's the goal of Republicans, to put people back to work and look for a long-term solution. If not, we end up in this kind of death spiral where you increase taxes, more people go out of work, so you have to increase taxes to take more care of more people, and it doesn't pencil out.
Let me hear from another Republican voice here. We've got Jim Nielsen on the line. He's a Republican from Gerber, California, represents the 2nd Assembly District and is vice chair of the Assembly Budget Committee. Assemblyman Nielsen, good to have you with us. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, this simply validates that these massive tax increases of $58 billion were absolutely not required.
Validates it how, sir?
The governor has given up on these massive tax increases and has demonstrated that this budget can be balanced without tax increases, as we have insisted all along. I must make a passing note of the process. There is no budget process in this institution anymore. It's a disgrace. Our staff have not even yet gotten the language that we will be voting on this afternoon to analyze. I'm sure Democratic members have not seen it either. Most members will not have any idea what they're voting on internally, not have any chance to actually read the bills before the votes this afternoon. That's a terrible way to run an institution. This budget also is fraught with legal problems, and we will be back here in October probably correcting those legal errors that will be in here. It is also a direct violation of the two-thirds vote requirement, creative ways to do it, which will probably be lost in court as well.
Well, your fellow assembly member, Connie Conway, says this budget is a victory for Republicans. You agree?
It's a victory for the people of the state of California. That's who the victors are. They will not be foisted on $58 billion of taxes to fund putting 28,000 inmates and parolees in their community to victimize them and 106,000 by 2015. That's the worst part of this whole budget. People were being asked to tax themselves to make themselves and their families victims.
Well, the worst part of it from many people's perspective is that you have social services and you have higher education and K-12 being cut pretty severely.
You have everything being cut severely. That's the toughness of the time. But you also have provision where there can be restoration of those funds, and there will be as money is available to it to do so. But what we cannot do is get on that overwhelming spending cycle that we've been on for decades and decades and decades. And the real problem with this budget, another one, is that there are no long-term reforms that will get control over the budget in the long run to hold back profligate spending that the legislature will be tempted to do, just as they were just a few weeks ago when $1.26 billion more showed up. What happened? All the committees met and started spending again immediately.
And you think that these projections of more revenue are pie in the sky from Governor Brown and the legislators?
Well, let's just say that they are optimistic, and finance seems to be more magnificently capable of understating expected revenues when that suits their purposes, as it has over the last few months when they were trying to argue for the tax increases, and magnificently able to inflate them when it does suit their purposes, as is the case now.
Jim Nielsen, again, is Republican from Gerber, California, represents the 2nd Assembly District and is vice chair of the Assembly Budget Committee. And Assemblyman, thank you so much for joining us. Well, Mark Leno, get a response from you.
Yes, of course. I just want to touch on the opposition from Mr. Nielsen with regard to the governor's realignment proposal suggesting that dangerous criminals will be returned to our community without any supervision. Hardly the case. And don't take that just from me, but the California State Association of Sheriffs supports the governor's proposal, as does the State Association of Police Chiefs supports the governor's proposal, as does the Chief Probation Officers of California. All of the law enforcement groups supports this reform because currently we are wasting billions of dollars annually to get failed results out of our corrections department. This brings some sense to it. So lower-level offenders, nonviolent, non-serious, non-sexual offenders, will still be in custody, but at the local level where it can be done less expensively and with flexibility, so that rather than send someone with a drug problem to state prison to learn how to be a hardened criminal, we keep them in their community, close to their family and friends, and give them the drug treatment they need because they've got a medical problem. They're not necessarily a criminal. These programs work. We know that they work, and they save money, and they keep our community safer. To suggest that because we've had a couple good months of restored revenue, we don't need any revenue. And keep in mind, Michael, the $6, $7 billion figure you keep hearing, that's the hole we're going to walk into next year, curiously, is the exact size hole that Arnold Schwarzenegger dug for the state of California when he rescinded the restoration of a 50-year-old vehicle license fee. That costs the general fund ongoing to this day $6 billion annually. And as a result, our schools have suffered, our colleges, our universities have suffered, our social safety net has suffered, public safety has suffered, our courts have suffered. Everything continues to suffer, along with an accumulated wall of debt of $35 billion. We have been starved for cash, and Arnold Schwarzenegger, for his own political success, gave average car owners $200 a year, but what a great deal. And Connie Conway should be happy that average family is going to save $1,000, but guess what? If you want to send your kid to college, it just went up by $2,000 or $3,000 more, and your kid's school year may be shortened by a full week if the governor's projected revenue doesn't come in. We need people to open their eyes that you get what you pay for and that the government provides great services that we depend upon, the economic engine that made this state the 8th largest economy in the world because for generations...
Mark, I'm going to have to jump in here in the interest of time.
Sure, we invested tax dollars to build an educational system that worked.
All right. Again, that's California Senator Mark Leno, Democrat representing San Francisco and Marin and chair of the Senate Budget and Fiscal Review Committee. Thank you for joining us.
I thank you.
John Myers, we've just heard sort of the nub of the problem and the pith of it, haven't we? It's like an allegory.
You have heard what I spend my time as a reporter listening to at the Capitol. And you know, and honestly, Michael, I will say that there are a couple of things here. But most importantly, I mean, what you really hear is a very different worldview about how to solve the state's problems. Is it a less government, less services, more free market controls, more help for people who need it? And because we have not resolved that, and because the voters have set some pretty specific guidelines about where money is spent and how it cannot be raised, or at least how hard it is to be raised, I think that does at least contribute to where we are every year.
And we've got some callers that we'd like to bring on, and we'll go to Los Altos and welcome Brian. Good morning.
Hi. To the gentleman's comment earlier about people on the dole, when you murder the University of California, you are condemning people to the dole for the rest of their lives. As a Republican of 39 years, I'm driving from the post office with the registration forms to change to Democratic. Thank you.
Okay. We thank you for that call. What would you say to that gentleman, John Fleischman?
Well, I mean, I guess the first thing I would say is, getting back to what Mark Leno said, all those law enforcement groups support the realignment plan because they have been told that that's the only way the Democrats are going to fund law enforcement. And so they literally put a gun to the heads of the law enforcement community and say, we're not, unless you support tax increases, unless you support extending car taxes, we're not going to choose to fund your priorities in our budget. And so I just want to make sure that the listeners understand that these government law enforcement agencies are simply responding to what the majority party is threatening to do to them. And that's important to understand. Relative to the person on the phone, nobody wants to see cuts in higher education. The problem is we're in the middle of a massive recession. Everybody has less money, and it's unfair to ask everyone to pay more in taxes so that government has more money. We need to get people back to work, and getting people back to work is what will then eventually allow us to increase funds to higher education, lower education, all those different areas. But it's a zero-sum game if you start to say, well, let's increase taxes to fund these groups, because every time you increase taxes, somebody's losing work. Somebody's losing their private sector job, because that's what put it over the edge. And then that person goes on the dole, and you just end up in an endless cycle. It's a very tough period of time, and I empathize with the caller. Nobody wants to see cuts to higher education, but, you know, on the other hand, it's untenable to continue with Californians being amongst the highest tax in the nation.
Well, here's Dan from Menlo Park who says, I'm a Californian, I don't make much money, but I understand that what we need is higher taxes and fewer tax breaks. Saying that lower taxes is a win for California taxpayers is short-sighted and naive. Lower taxes is equivalent to killing the future of our state. Lower taxes means under-investing in education and infrastructure. How can the state thrive? How can we continue to attract and keep top businesses when our next generation is uneducated, our roads are crumbling, and our utility infrastructure is antiquated? And David from San Mateo says, I'm of the opinion, a pox on both their houses. Federal and state government are so wrapped in ideology that they're failing the people. Politics is a game of compromise. Partisan politics is laughed at like some cynical joke, but it's eroding our country within. You have my blood pressure up. And Gene Ross, explain, because I'm getting a lot of emails asking about this, explain how these built-in triggers would work and how they'd go into effect in the timeline. Can you?
We can't. As John said, we haven't seen the language, and this is one of those things where the devil is always in the details. It appears, as John outlined, that there will be a set of triggers tied to dollar amounts of revenues. Certain things will occur automatically, so the legislature won't go back in. They're locking in today what would be cut if revenues don't meet the established targets. Triggers are something, so I said earlier, that traditionally the financial markets have asked for when California's had budgets that do rely on perhaps some aggressive assumptions. I want to go back to the very important question of private sector job growth, because I think it's essential. Some very interesting research published yesterday by the Center for American Progress shows that states that increased spending during the economic downturn saw an increase in private sector jobs during the downturn. Those states that cut spending, including California, on average, saw a very substantial drop in private sector employment. And that's because the public sector and the private sector work together. A lot of those public dollars flow through to highway contractors, to hospitals, to other private sector employers. And the public sector sets the stage for a healthy private economy. Until we have adequate public investment in California, we're not going to see strong private sector job growth.
And again, Gene Ross is with us as Executive Director of California Budget Project. John Myers is Sacramento Bureau Chief for KQED-FM. And John, here's Kelly who says, Senator Leno, getting at a question that's always bothered me. Why not have a ballot measure to repeal the two-thirds required to raise taxes?
Well, you know, a lot of folks have talked about it. There have been initiatives that have been at least drawn up that way. I don't know. None of them have actually qualified for the ballot. The problem is when you look at the polling, the voters like that requirement. And if the polling is right, the voters would reject a lowering of the two-thirds vote for taxes. And we should remember that two-thirds vote in the legislature to increase taxes was part of Proposition 13. So no doubt you're going to get the backers of Prop 13, all parts of Prop 13, to come out and defend Prop 13 if that ever makes it to the ballot. But again, it is something you hear, especially in particular circles, that is an impediment. And it is true that we have now created, through last year's Prop 25, a different system, a system where you can pass a budget easier if there are no taxes. If the taxes are in, it makes it that much harder. And, of course, your political stripes depend on whether you think it's a good idea.
Well, you also hear a change of Constitution, go back to Proposition 13, but there just isn't the political will. And so we're in gridlock. And we're going to get another caller on here, and that's you, Paul. Good morning.
Hello. We spent a lot of time listening to the political commenters have their talking points. I would just say that Mark Leno did say one thing that I agree with. You get what you pay for. I'm one of those taxpayers who's willing to pay for the services I get from the state. And the Republicans would not go along with the governor's idea of putting an initiative on the ballot to extend the taxes that we already had. We were already feeling the pain. I'm quite willing to continue paying what I've been paying. And then we would have avoided a lot of this mess. And so the Republican talked about adult supervision. His idea of adult supervision was to keep the voters of California from deciding whether they wanted to keep those taxes or not. So congratulations, Republicans. You've kept us from voting.
Let's get a quick response from you, John Fleischman.
Yeah, this is really straightforward. In May of 2009, so just 2 years ago, California voters were asked to extend these very same taxes for only 2 years. Jerry Brown wants to extend them for 4 years. To almost two-thirds of Californians, including every county in California, including Senator Leno's home county of San Francisco, rejected those tax increases, saying we don't want the temporary taxes to extend beyond this Friday. And so Republicans are saying we've already had a vote where over 6 million Californians participated. We listened to the vote, and I respect the fact that the caller probably was on the losing end of that vote, but it doesn't change the fact that simply going back to the voters without any kind of meaningful reforms to the system is like saying, please give the drug addict more drugs without fixing the underlying addiction.
We'll have to end it there with the underlying addiction. John Fleischman, thank you for joining us. John Fleischman, GOP strategist and publisher of the FlashReport.org website on California politics. Our thanks to you and Gene Ross, Executive Director of the California Budget Project, Public Policy Research Group in Sacramento, and John Myers, our Sacramento Bureau Chief. Also want to thank our Senior Editor, Dan Zoll, our producers, Kevin Guillory, Judy Campbell, Tina Larberg, and Amy Machado. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and our Executive Producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.